This is New Hampshire Public Radio News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In other state legislatures this year, abortion has been a huge topic. Several have passed some of the strictest abortion laws seen in decades. But in New Hampshire, the abortion debate is remarkably quiet. Earlier this year, the House rejected one bill to mandate a 24-hour waiting period before a woman could undergo the procedure, while the Senate hasn't taken up this issue at all. Still, advocates on both sides in New Hampshire can't help but look at what's happening elsewhere and wonder how it might affect the Granite State. Two movements are shaping up that could have an impact. One is the Affordable Care Act, which leaves decisions about abortion coverage largely up to the states, and already different states are taking very different positions on this. The other is the likelihood of a new U.S. Supreme Court case on abortion. Many predict that North Dakota's recent law banning abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy is destined for the high court. Today in The Exchange, the shifting landscape of abortion law, what's happening nationally, and whether it may affect New Hampshire. Let's hear from you. What do you make of the trends on abortion we're seeing elsewhere, and do you think they'll have an impact on the Granite State? Also, do you think New Hampshire's mostly hands-off approach toward abortion is the right approach, or would you like to see this procedure restricted? Give us a call, the Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests for the hour with us in studio, Ashley Pratt, Executive Director of Cornerstone Action and Cornerstone Policy Research. And Ashley, nice to meet you. Thank you for
nice
being here.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Jennifer Frizzell, Senior Policy Advisor for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. And Jen, thanks for your time. We appreciate you being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, let's look outside New Hampshire first, because as I said, that's where most of the activity is on this issue. And Jen Frizzell, to you first, your reaction to the laws passed recently in North Dakota banning abortions after 6 weeks, and in Arkansas banning them after 12 weeks. These have received a lot of attention.
Well, you know, Laura, at Planned Parenthood, we are the largest provider of reproductive and sexual health services for women across the country. And we're actually seeing patients in all of these states, as well as serving in the role as an advocate. And what we're seeing in states like North Dakota and Arkansas is a real new level of extremism and a race to the bottom in the attacks on women's health. Not only attacks on safe legal abortion at the earliest stages of pregnancy, but also attacks against birth control and women's health services. And it should be a wake-up call to the American women that their rights are in jeopardy, and that depending on your zip code, now may in fact influence whether or not you have access to basic reproductive health care.
And so strong concerns I'm hearing from you, Jen, at Planned Parenthood, obviously given your stance on this issue. Are you surprised, given that there was so much attention during the 2012 election to, you know, women's issues and so forth? Are you surprised to see these happening now in the states?
Well, you know, certainly the last few years, there has been an intense effort coordinated nationwide to see hundreds of state-level restrictions introduced in state legislatures. And so what we've seen in the last few months in those states that you mentioned is really a continuation of what we saw even here in New Hampshire in 2011 and 2012. Am I surprised? It's certainly unfortunate, and it's a greater level of intensity and attention to these legislative efforts than in any of the 40 years since Roe v. Wade.
And we'll talk again a little bit later about the landscape here in New Hampshire. But Ashley Pratt, you too, your reaction to what's been happening in other states, especially, again, Arkansas and North Dakota, which have received so much attention.
Right. Well, I think, obviously, I have a very different standpoint than that of Planned Parenthood. We at Cornerstone obviously believe in, you know, at life begins at conception. And that is one of the legislative efforts that actually North Dakota had put forward as well. The Senate, I believe, had also voted on that a couple weeks prior to the House. And they had decided, I think, in a vote of 57 to 35, that life does, in fact, begin at conception. So that would ultimately ban abortions in the state. And that's where I think, you know, the Supreme Court could eventually come into that case just because of the decision on Roe v. Wade. And I think in this year where obviously, you know, the 40th anniversary was recognized nationally, I do think that this is obviously a very divisive topic that still exists in each and every state, not just nationally. And I do believe that it's a state's choice in that point. And I'm a big states' rights person, and I believe that it should be up to the state to decide that. And, you know, I think there should be options available for women, and we shouldn't just be, you know, rushing them to the nearest abortion clinic when they are pregnant. I think they need to know all of their choices, all of their options, and that's a way to empower women.
Well, and a lot of conversation around, again, what's happened in some of these states that have put some pretty tough restrictions on. And this is for you, Ashley, first. A lot of the conversation has looked at whether those who oppose abortion, as Cornerstone does, are smarter to use what are called chip away tactics versus broad bans on the procedure. What do you think, Ashley? Better to sort of chip away or use this sledgehammer approach?
Personally, I mean, being from New Hampshire, I think the chip away tactics work a lot better, especially when you have a legislature that turns over pretty much every 2 years consistently. That seems to be the case. And to chip away at it, I think, is a lot more effective when it comes to policy. For example, you had mentioned HB 483, which came up this year in the House, which was an informed consent bill, which called for a 24-hour waiting period before a woman would go in for a procedure to receive an abortion. At that point, the House did vote in a pretty partisan way. It was very split between House Democrats and Republicans. It did not pass the House. Senate, as you mentioned, has not taken it up. But that was the way I think the House Republicans who had put forward the informed consent bill were chipping away at the abortion issue, knowing that, you know, it's a Democrat-controlled legislature, and on most of these issues, we aren't going to get one full sweeping, you know, legislative act passed like in North Dakota or Arkansas, where it was, you know, their tactful way of doing it. They had a Republican-controlled legislature, and they found that that was the best way to move forward with policy. Here in New Hampshire, I don't think it works that way.
Again, looking at each state's political landscape. Jennifer Frizzella, I want your thoughts, too. What is the possibility that these more extensive measures, these sledgehammer approaches, what's the possibility that these make other proposals that you would also find troubling look reasonable by comparison?
Well, you know, I think that all of these proposals intend to undermine the principled ability of women to make this very intensely personal decision on her own in consultation with her family, her faith, and her healthcare provider. And, you know, not unlike Cornerstone, Planned Parenthood believes firmly that women should have access to all of information necessary to make a decision that's appropriate for them, whether that's to choose adoption, to end a pregnancy, or to decide to raise a child. And, you know, whether or not there's a ferocious type of full frontal attack in challenging the very constitutional rights that the Roe decision enabled for American women, or whether it's through barriers and delays and attempts to make abortion more difficult, ultimately access to safe legal abortion for American women is at risk in these debates.
Our phone number for you to join our conversation is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at the shifting landscape of abortion law. And as we've mentioned, several states have passed or are debating more restrictions on abortion. Here in New Hampshire, though, the landscape is pretty quiet this year, but we're sitting down with activists on both sides this hour, looking at what's happening elsewhere, whether there will be an impact on the Granite State. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. What do you make of the trends that we're seeing elsewhere on abortion, the rising number of states enacting tight restrictions on this procedure? And do you think these trends will have an impact on abortion law here in New Hampshire? Our number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Keep those emails short. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Ashley Pratt, to you too, that question that I asked Jen, what's the possibility of a backfire that these laws that, you know, North Dakota and others are doing go way too far for a lot of folks, and Americans say, whoa, whoa, this is going overboard?
I think one of the main arguments that have come, you know, from both sides, no matter where you are in the political spectrum, is what is government's role in deciding things like this, especially when it comes to these personal decisions? I do, again, think that it's a state's right to be able to choose to do these things, and it should not be, you know, a federal mandate. And, I mean, there are certain things that are going on right now, you know, politically as well with the whole gay marriage debate and everything, too. And, again, there I do believe states' rights are important, and a state has a right to choose in their own legislature what they, you know, want to do. I do recognize the argument, though, that how far can government control go, but I do believe in limited government. But in this case, it's, you know, protecting the unborn, which I think is important. I mean, since the Roe v. Wade decision, 55 million, you know, babies have been killed as a result of it. And what most people don't know in the general public is that the Roe v. Wade decision 40 years ago actually called for three things: a ban on partial birth abortion, informed consent laws, and parental notification, which I'm proud to say here in New Hampshire, the last legislative cycle, we did get parental notification passed here in the state, which is, again, one of those chip away things, not completely sledgehammer, you know, a packet of abortion bills or anything like that. But it does, in fact, allow for, you know, a parent to be notified if their daughter were to go in to receive an abortion.
So that's the lay of the land here in New Hampshire then. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Ashley. My understanding of New Hampshire abortion law, Jennifer Frizzell, is that we're pretty hands-off, but we do have a parental notification law. Is that pretty much the extent of it?
That's correct. New Hampshire has actually two abortion restrictions on the books. Both of them were enacted in the 2011-2012 biennium. The first was, as Ashley mentioned, a parental notification requirement.
And New Hampshire's gone back and forth on that.
And the second was a state version of a federal law that banned specific abortion procedures.
Yeah, mimicking the federal law, which some people said at the time, you don't need this, but the legislature felt that it wanted to go on record. Is anybody talking about, Jen, getting rid of the parental notification requirement in New Hampshire in the next year of the legislature? I know this year is all about the budget. Is anybody looking at parental notification for next year?
So that's not a conversation that we're actively a part of right now. You know, there are 424 legislators, and they all have a mind of their own, and they all have policy priorities. Some are in sync, some not, with our organization's priorities. I think from our perspective, certainly we opposed the underlying policy of parental notification because of the delays and the risks it poses to young women. But what we're doing right now, because we think it's best to make these decisions based on data, is that we're conducting a two-year study of what is the impact of the new law on young women and their patterns of utilizing abortion in New Hampshire. Are more of them contacting their parents? Are some of them utilizing the courts? And we're not going to be asking the legislature to make any change until we can bring good data and analysis to their attention.
More after a short break. Stay with us.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more on the shifting landscape of abortion law on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, the proposed Keystone XL pipeline, and the ongoing debate over U.S. energy policy. You have a unique set of experiences and expertise, and NHPR would like you to help us with our news coverage and join our Public Insight Network and let us know what stories we should consult you on. Find out more about PIN at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, the law firm whose attorneys offer clients practical legal advice. Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, practicing law with their sleeves rolled up, online at haslaw.com. And from the New Hampshire Union Leader and NewHampshire.com, opening up the stories, events, and resources essential to living in the Granite State. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the changing landscape of abortion laws, 40 years after the Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized abortion. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. What do you make of some of the trends that we're hearing about in the news on abortion in other states, especially North Dakota's new law, which bans abortions after 6 weeks? That's gotten a lot of attention. Do you think some of these trends elsewhere will have an impact on abortion law here in the Granite State? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are Ashley Pratt, Executive Director of Cornerstone Action and Cornerstone Policy Research. Also, Jennifer Frizzell, Senior Policy Advisor for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. And just before the break, Ashley, Jennifer was talking about the two restrictions that New Hampshire does have on the books in terms of abortion. Again, a state law mimicking a federal ban on so-called partial birth abortion. Also, the parental notification law, which you mentioned as well. I asked Jen, and I'd like to ask you too, is anybody talking about next year introducing some abortion-related legislation? I know this year everybody's pretty much focused on the budget.
There was talk at one point at the beginning of this session of introducing a heartbeat bill similar to the one that just went up in North Dakota, recognizing it that about 6 weeks into pregnancy, the fetal heartbeat, you know, can be felt and is present, but that has not come forward. The only one that we had, you know, really kind of been engaged in was the informed consent bill, HB 43, which was, you know, obviously killed in the House. And the only other thing that I could think of would be maybe the fetal heartbeat bill could come up within the next session, but I don't expect anything to come up in the remaining time that's left. A lot of focus is on the gambling issue and the budget, and
right,
that's where a lot of their priorities are at this point.
Right, and we see that often, that the first year the session's devoted to financial, budgetary, and then the second year is devoted more to so-called mm-hmm. social issues. Jennifer, you want to jump in?
Well, I know one of the things that we are talking about is looking at issues around patient safety zones, around reproductive health facilities that provide safe legal abortion. There was a relatively significant case out of Massachusetts recently where a 35-foot buffer zone to protect patients entering and exiting clinics was upheld through our appellate court as an appropriate balance between the free speech rights of protesters and the need for patients to have safe access uninterrupted to get in and out of healthcare facilities. And there are facilities in New Hampshire, including a Planned Parenthood facility in Manchester, where there have been increasing amounts of activity that are targeting and intimidating patients. And so whether that's looking at city ordinances, whether that's looking at statewide legislation, there are many examples of these ordinances that or state laws that protect patients throughout the New England region. And we're going to be looking closely at that.
Okay, so that's the issue. And I think we've talked about this before a long time ago of how closely and vociferously protesters can be to a clinic that provides abortions. That's been an issue, and it bumps into free speech. So that may come up next year on the docket.
We're just having preliminary conversations.
Okay. I want to invite our listeners again to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Jillian's been waiting in Hudson. Hi, Jillian. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, I'm just really concerned. You know, I'm a young person. I'm 26. And I think that a lot of people don't realize, you know, what it was like before Roe v. Wade 40 years ago. You know, I'm concerned about, you know, women having to have these back alley abortions. And, you know, even now we have people who, you know, can't access medical abortions. And they are having pills sent to them across state lines and, you know, taking them without doctor supervision. So, you know, I'm just really concerned about that and want young people to know that, you know, this could happen. We could go back.
Jillian, do you think that there should be any restrictions on abortion, such as New Hampshire's parental notification law?
I mean, I really think that, you know, it should be an issue between women and their doctors. You know, what's moral and what's legal, I think, are different things. You know, there are a lot of things that people do that I think are wrong, but I don't think should be illegal. So, you know, that's kind of where I do.
Okay,
you know,
Jillian.
Bring that up.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Ashley, what do you think about Jillian's comments that we need to remember what it was like for women before Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, thank you, Jillian, for calling in. This is a very, you know, obviously important topic. I myself am 23, will be 24 in a month, so I too consider myself to be a young woman. And I also recognize that, you know, 40 years ago, yes, you know, there were the back alley abortions that Jillian was referring to. And, I, you know, I'm not saying that you know, abortion should be these dangerous procedures that are going on. But there are things such as like the informed consent bill that we tried to put forward this year, which protect women receiving these abortions by allowing them to know the risks, the facts, and all the details of the procedure by the physician that would be, you know, doing the procedure itself. I don't know why we would want to not make these women aware of what will be happening. I mean, it's a very invasive procedure. It's something that I would want to know the full details of. If I were having, you know, my hip replaced or my knee replaced or something like that, I would want to know all the details. And I think it should be provided by the physician and required by law to have all of this information in place before a woman makes this, you know, very important life-altering decision. And there are, you know, these instances of women that come forward after they've received an abortion and have said, you know, I wish I had known what would happen or what the risk would have been or that I could have gone into a depression or something after, but they did not know the risk going in. And I think the information is the most powerful thing we can do to empower women. And that's what I think the informed consent bill called for. So while I, you know, appreciate Jillian's comments, I do think there are still things we can do to make this, you know, a more safe environment for women and to allow them to know their options and their choices.
You know, it's interesting. Jillian, thanks for the call. Something she said sparked a question that I wanted to ask both of you. She mentioned the use of abortion pills, RU486. I remember, Jen Frizzell, a couple years ago when RU486 really came on the scene, people said, this is going to end the debate over abortion. People will be able to do this safely and quietly, you know, with just a couple doctor visits, and we won't have these big, you know, demonstrations and so forth anymore. That hasn't really happened, has it?
Well, it certainly hasn't limited the attempts that politicians make to restrict access to abortion. The introduction of medication abortion, which is, as you say, a pharmaceutical regimen that can cause women to experience an abortion up till 9 weeks in pregnancy is when it's available. It's increasingly utilized by women, but it still requires doctor visits. There's still some of the same access problems for women. It's not, you know, complicated or complex surgery, nor is early surgical abortion for that matter. And so we certainly do see patients opting for that regimen, but not all of them. And not all women who find themselves pregnant and seeking to end the pregnancy are able to time the seeking of the abortion to be able to take advantage of the medication regimen.
Thanks again for the call, Jillian. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Avis who says, it should be available in New Hampshire up to 3 months. Avis says it is a personal, emotional, and financial decision. However, this said there should be mandatory sex education at the high school level that provides details about how pregnancy occurred and that one, I'm not quite sure what this she's trying to say there. I won't read that part. I'm not quite sure. Also, they should be exposed to and experience for 3 months the reality of what it means to provide care for and raise a child. Adoption should be an option, and the biological parents should select the family with whom they place the child. You know, this seems like, Avis, thank you for that email. This seems like, Ashley and Jen, Ashley, you first, an area of possible middle ground, something people say is becoming more and more rare in this abortion debate.
Again, I'm not quite sure where she was getting with that, but I the first part of it with the 3 months.
It should be available in New Hampshire up to 3 months.
Okay. I personally don't think that that should be, you know, really even allowed. But I do understand that, you know, sometimes pregnancies happen. But while you're making a conscious decision to have sex, I would say that you should know the consequences of your actions. And if you're going to do that, you should be ready for the consequences that could occur. And one of those could be pregnancy. And I think it's important at that point that you explore your options. And I think that it's important that the family, you know, is involved, which is why I agree with the parental notification bill. And again, you know, putting something forward that explains the risks of the procedure. And I think there's nothing wrong with having a 24-hour waiting period before a woman receives, you know, an abortion because of the fact that, I mean, if you're not going to consider a life that exists inside of you for more than 24 hours, I don't know what kind of society we're living in at that point, that you can just disregard, you know, a human being.
I appreciate Avis's point about, you know, sex education and so forth, and exposing young people to the reality of raising a child. Those of us who have done it know it's quite a lot of work. What about this idea, though, of middle ground, Jen Frizzell? More and more of the analysis that I'm reading says the middle ground is almost gone when it comes to abortion.
Well, I think it's great for you to draw our attention to things that should unite us. You mentioned earlier kind of posing a question of two alternatives for those who wish to reduce abortion, whether they want to repeal access altogether or whether they want to chip away through restriction after restriction. And I would offer that actually the most productive way of reducing abortion is through prevention. And I think the caller mentioned sex education. It's certainly important for our young people to have access to information about how to avoid unintended pregnancy, about how to avoid sexually transmitted diseases and infections, and how to navigate adolescence in a way that they can emerge as healthy adults. And I would hope that that is an area that our policymakers on both sides of the abortion issue could agree upon. Now, I say that with some reluctance, because in North Dakota, at the same time that they have just passed this ban on abortion after 6 weeks, they've also passed a piece of legislation to eliminate sex education for their teens in North Dakota high schools. So I'm not optimistic that all of us agree that that's common ground. You mentioned in the opening the Affordable Care Act. Maybe we'll talk about that in another question, but there are so many opportunities by increasing access to birth control for lower and income and uninsured women in the state and in this country, where we could be working together to reduce the number of abortions.
All right. Well, and what you said about North Dakota makes Avis's email all that more interesting. Thank you, Avis. Go ahead, Ashley.
Going on the prevention standpoint and, you know, trying to see where we can find middle ground, I do think obviously prevention is important, but I think it's the way in which we go about prevention. I don't think starting sex education, you know, in third grade would be is something that's beneficial to our students. I think, you know, around the middle school, high school time, that's when it's important, you know, when their bodies are changing and all of that. It's important to have those conversations. But what I will say is, as a result of this, you know, instant gratification culture that we're living in, where we have access to birth control, you know, pretty much at our fingertips, you know, on college campuses. I mean, that whole BC debate that's going on right now at Boston College with, you know, a Catholic university or college being able to decide whether or not to have condoms on campus. You know, it should be left up to the college or university, but I'm backtracking. So the CDC recently, a couple days ago on March 27th, released a report saying that, well, the CDC anyways, found that there were 19.7 million new venereal infections in the United States in 2008, bringing the total number of existing sexually transmitted infections in the U.S. at that time to an all-time high of 110 million. So that means, you know, pretty much like one out of three. And this is between the 15 to 24 age bracket that many of these had been occurring. So if we're going to talk about prevention, I think it's important to recognize that in this instant gratification culture where birth control is at our fingertips, it's still not preventing these sexually transmitted diseases in a, you know, promiscuous culture that's now occurring.
Let's take another call if we could. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Russell's calling in from Dublin. Russell, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I think we should be hearing from some business recruiters about this discussion and about the stand your ground law that's being discussed in the legislature.
Russell, we're not talking about stand your ground today. We talked about that yesterday.
In Wichita, when Randall Terry.
Okay.
Parenthood.
Yeah, okay.
And that's still costing Wichita, Kansas, lots of people who won't go there to work. And I think that's what's going to happen in New Hampshire. You can't have the legislature getting into these kinds of decisions and mandating these kinds of things. It's just nuts.
So relating the gun laws to the killing, I think there was a killing of abortion doctors in Wichita, and he's saying that created kind of an uncomfortable environment. I'm not really quite sure where to go with that. So I think I'll leave that as it is. And Russell, thank you for chiming in. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. I want to ask both of you a broader question. Looking at the polling on this issue, it shows that Americans are not black and white about abortion. You know, whereas one group may feel, no, you should not have abortion ever, and another group may feel, yes, abortion should be widely available. Most Americans say, you know, I'm not really sure. I agree with some restrictions. I don't mind parental notification. I do think abortion should be safe and legal in terms of rape, incest, and so forth. I wonder what the two of you think about that, that this is not black and white for folks, Jen Frazelle.
Well, I would certainly agree. I mean, most Americans, most New Hampshire residents believe that abortion is an intensely personal, often complex decision for a woman to make, but it should be hers to make in the with the counsel of those family members, her faith, or her health care provider as she chooses. But what we are seeing more and more along the lines of your question is that the pro-choice, pro-life labels do not reflect the conversation that's actually happening today in our country about these issues. The labels don't reflect the complexity of how most people actually think about abortion. And so what we're doing at Planned Parenthood is trying hard to get away from those labels. Instead of putting people in one category or another, we try to urge the dialogue to respect the very real life decisions that women and their families make every day.
And what do you think about that, Ashley? And then I have another question for you about American attitudes that most people don't fall into the black or the white camp.
Yeah, taking it back to kind of New Hampshire, there was a poll done by New England College, and they had called randomly over 10,000 phone numbers here in the state, and there were 600 responses. And it's interesting that they asked a question, are you pro-life? And 32% of people said yes. And if you asked, are you pro-choice? 60% of people said yes. So there you see the argument, you know, with the two labels of pro-life or pro-choice, which I'll get to that in a second. But when you asked if a fetus can feel pain in the womb, it changed that 41% of people would say abortion should not be allowed, or that they would, you know, agree with, you know, abortion not happening at that point. And there were 37% who had said, yes, that's okay. So the dynamics
really
change
shift,
completely once you really message the, you know, the topic differently. So I agree with Jennifer in this point that, you know, it's very divisive in this landscape right now if you say pro-choice, pro-life. And I think the conversation needs to change to empowerment and how we can get, you know, these choices out there. But if a fetus can feel pain in the womb, and that will drastically change people's perceptions on whether or not they agree with abortion, I think that there's, you know, some insight there that we should be digging a little bit deeper into this issue and not just, you know, labeling pro-choice or pro-life. I do think most people would say that abortion at that point is wrong and that they don't agree with it.
You know, and I have to ask you this, Jen Frazelle, even though it's not quite what we're talking about today, there's been so much conversation, though, about this, that as more and more Americans and more states become more accepting of gay marriage, abortion, on the other hand, the polling is pretty much the same. Our attitudes haven't changed over 40 years. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, actually, I think the polling is slowly growing for more Americans supporting safe legal abortion and not wanting to see the Roe decision overturned. That's certainly the polling we looked at after the 2012 election. I think it's gotten a lot of national recognition. And it's true in New Hampshire as well, that there's increasing support for safe legal abortion amongst New Hampshire folks. But as to the nature of your question, I think you know, choosing a partner and being in a lifelong relationship like a marriage is a very outward and public decision that people make. They want to be recognized by their peers, by their family. And abortion is an intensely personal decision. And it's not something that people necessarily want to share outside the small network of people they consult with. And the types of stigma and a judgment that have been directed at women who have had abortion in the last four decades have not made it a comfortable conversation in the public arena.
All right. More after a short break, so keep it right here.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Rotary, providing community service to Vermont, New Hampshire, and the world. Rotary, humanity in motion. Information at Rotary7870.org. And from the University of New Hampshire School of Law and its Franklin Pierce Center for Intellectual Property, pioneering legal education for New Hampshire and the world, at law.unh.edu. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, Alone in the Zone. A documentary tells the story of one man living in the shadow of Fukushima, absorbing deadly doses of radiation to care for animals left behind after the tsunami and nuclear disaster. Plus, a poisonous potato chip serves as cautionary tale against the dangers of conventional plant breeding. I'm Rebecca Lavoy. Word of Mouth can't stop at just one new idea. Today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, how economic instability in Europe may influence the U.S. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, we're looking at the shifting landscape of abortion law across the country 40 years after Roe v. Wade. You can join our conversation 1-800-892-6477. What do you make of the trends on abortion we're seeing elsewhere, especially in states like Kansas, Arkansas, North Dakota, which this year have enacted tight restrictions on abortion? Do you think these trends will have an impact on abortion law in the Granite State? What types of restrictions do you think New Hampshire should have on abortion? As we've heard, New Hampshire has largely a hands-off approach, although we do have a parental notification law. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And one of you mentioned this earlier, Ashley, I think it was you. The Affordable Care Act is coming, has to be fully in place by 2012. Governors and legislatures are gearing up this year. One of the decisions they have to make, Ashley, as you know, is how to approach abortion under the Affordable Care Act. What are you seeing out there, and what do you hope to see as the nation moves to implement this law?
Well, one of the big things when the Affordable Care Act came up was the idea of Catholic hospitals, you know, having to provide abortions or having to provide contraception, which they didn't agree with for their staff and their health insurance policies. And I again, think that it's important to separate church and state at that point, even under this federal mandate. I think it's important for, you know, hospitals to make their own decisions regarding what procedures they will have available to their patients. And I do think that that's a hospital's choice. And for Catholic or any faith-based hospital, I think it's important to maintain that right. You know, CMC, Catholic Medical Center here in Manchester, New Hampshire, they should not have to perform abortions if they don't, you know, in good faith agree with it. And I, again, with this federal mandate, I think that's something that, you know, is important to recognize, that they should maintain their individuality and their, you know, beliefs, and that should not be questioned. And if it does, I do think that there could be a court case out of it, just like there is right now with, you know, these laws that are coming out of North Dakota. So the flip side of that is I do think that hospitals should maintain their right to, you know, provide whatever procedures they find reasonable and in line with their values.
So could this, Jen Frizzell, what do you think, could the Affordable Care Act provide another front in the abortion wars?
Well, you know, I think there will be some state regulatory function around ensuring that women who are in the exchange, for example, have access to purchase plans with abortion. The marketplace in New Hampshire before the Affordable Care Act, most of the companies that do business here, their standard issued insurance plan included elected abortion as part of the standard plan. And certainly those who wish to purchase policies without abortion coverage are entitled to access a rider or an alternative plan. And so I think for us, it's important that the exchange continue to provide women with access to insurance products that include abortion. But the real promise for the Affordable Care Act is on the preventative care for women. The inclusion of contraception, the ability of women who are now uninsured to have access to the type of birth control counseling and information that will allow them to plan proactively for pregnancies, will increase the number of healthy pregnancies, and will significantly reduce the number of abortions. We actually looked at a study a couple of years ago that was done about New Hampshire. If women up to 185% of the federal poverty level, all who seek birth control, had access to it, we could see a reduction in the number of abortions in New Hampshire by as many as 500 a year. So that's the type of policy we would hope would unite lawmakers.
So that's one of the questions about the Affordable Care Act, how these health care exchanges will or will not affect abortion coverage. The Affordable Care Act also hopes to cover more people through the expansion of Medicaid. From what I understand, Ashley, correct me if I'm wrong, right now in New Hampshire, you can't use Medicaid coverage to pay for abortions.
Correct.
That's the Hyde Amendment.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, so I really have no knowledge on this, with the Medicaid expansion plan that was just put forward in the House that was voted on. I'm not sure. Maybe Jennifer knows whether or not it's included in that. But to my knowledge, it is not.
So in that sense, it's not an issue. It's more an issue with the healthcare exchanges.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Jen?
That's correct. Medicaid itself maintains a restriction on abortions except in very narrow, limited circumstances. The Hyde Amendment, which is the life of the mother or the case of rape and incest. And if the Medicaid program is expanded, as is being considered in the legislature right now, that same limited access will apply to those who get their health insurance through Medicaid. The counterpart, as you identify, is the private marketplace. The private marketplace has much more standardized abortion coverage, and that will probably continue, although it will be a choice of consumers who enter the exchange which plans are available to
them. Yeah, I think it differs state by state, Jen. I did read about half a dozen states are already saying, no, we don't want our exchanges, the insurance products on our exchanges, to include abortion coverage. So I think it depends.
That's certainly one of the
state
legislative measures that's being deliberated across the country.
All right, let's bring our listeners back into our conversation. Ben's calling from Berlin. Hi, Ben. You're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting.
Sure, no problem. Now, I really appreciate this this dialogue today. And I wanted to say that I've always been, always had the belief that life starts at conception. And in the sort of pro-life movement that I was involved in my 20s, there was a lot of demonization of anybody in Planned Parenthood. But the older I've gotten, the more I see that people in Planned Parenthood, the doctors and nurses, are really there because they care about women's health, not because they want to do abortions. And I think that I'd like to see more dialogue between religious organizations and Planned Parenthood, more working together and less of a propaganda war that I've seen going on in the past, because we're not there to fight each other. We're there to help women in their health issues.
Well, and so, Ben, you said as a young man you believe that life begins at conception. How do you feel now?
I still believe that, but I think that we can't view each other as enemies. You know what I mean?
Ben, thanks a lot. Yeah. Go ahead, Ashley. What do you think? This is a real interesting point. A call for middle ground. We discussed that earlier, but go ahead.
Thank you, Ben, for your call. I again think it's important not to view each other as enemies. We're all human beings in this race. We just have, you know, obviously a difference in opinion when it comes to this issue. And I think it's important, you know, to recognize what he said. There have been cases, and we have people that will come to our organization and say, you know, I received an abortion and I wish I hadn't done it. And I was not provided, you know, with the facts that I needed in making this decision. And I felt like I was a cattle kind of just being driven in there. And I had no idea what I was doing and the way that it would impact my body. And I kind of wish that I had known more at the time. And I think that that's important to recognize, that, you know, while Planned Parenthood, they do make the argument that they are providing, you know, women with, you know, a multitude of options as well as preventative care and, you know, this whole idea of female empowerment, I think it's important to realize that, you know, the women that are coming in there are making a very, very personal decision. And I know that Jennifer recognizes that. It's frustrating to me as a young woman to see, you know, abortion as an option when they're making a conscious decision to, you know, engage in something that could eventually have a consequence of a child. And when you limit life to the idea that it just doesn't exist or it's irrelevant, and that is where I think the conversation really needs to change here in this country, our respect for life in general. If you look at, you know, a variety of subjects, not just abortion, we really devalue life in our culture now. And it's sad to me to watch, you know, growing up, how this culture has really shifted. But you can see it, I mean, from the desensitization to violence on television and what's produced on the media and in news now. And again, I think the conversation needs to shift from, you know, being enemies with one another in this political spectrum to how do we become a culture that values human life and human dignity.
What do you think about Ben's comments? Ben, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Jen.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, there's no one universal view in this society about when life begins. In fact, questions about when life begins are they're deeply personal, and they've been debated by, you know, theologians and scientists for centuries before us in this conversation. For some people, that question is answered based on their faith, and for others, based on science and medicine. So the one thing that I know is that the 424 legislators in the New Hampshire legislature or those in the members of Congress aren't the experts on this, and we're not going to resolve it universally. And I respect the position of Ben in saying he's been able to evolve to say that there's no one perspective to dominate here. And I also appreciate his gesture of recognition that the work that the medical professionals do every day at organizations like Planned Parenthood and other reproductive health providers are really geared towards helping women make the best decisions for themselves about their reproductive health, making sure they're fully informed and they have access to the type of information and counseling that will allow them to have children and the number of children that they're ready for.
Well, Ben, thanks a lot for the call again. And since you mentioned the legislature, Jen, I'll throw this back to you. What role do you think abortion played in the race for governor and legislature this year? There are some people who say that, you know, the groups like Emily's List, the pro-choice groups like Emily's List and others played a big role in helping Democrats get elected this past year.
Well, you know, we have a sister organization, the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. We certainly did some work with voters and supporters. And, you know, I will say that women's health was an incredibly mobilizing issue amongst our supporters. And I think it was more salient in New Hampshire elections because the threats that were very real that were introduced, some that passed in 2011 and 2012 legislature. So, you know, those very legislative attacks that almost put services at risk in New Hampshire mobilized both previously complacent supporters as well as a whole new generation of supporters. And those people did get involved in the elections. And we saw women across party spectrums, across affiliations, being very concerned about their health and their health care when they went into the voting booth.
What do you think, Ashley? What role did abortion and related issues play in our races for legislature and governor? I remember on election night, Ovid Lamontagne, the Republican candidate for governor, kind of said that some of these outside groups made this a big issue and he felt helped contribute to his defeat.
Well, I mean, the outside groups certainly played a huge role and had a large influence in this election. And, you know, there's a lot of studies being shown at this point after, you know, debriefing on elections about the role of outside money from organizations like either of ours that can influence the election and not just, you know, the candidates fundraising or their funds for their own race. But I will say that I think when it came to the 2012 elections, it was all about the messaging. We really, as Republicans, had allowed ourselves to be defined rather than define ourselves. And we were not up on air, at least in the governor's race. Once the primary had been cleared, within 2 days, an outside group supporting Maggie Hassan had come right on the air, and we had nothing to combat that. So we were already being defined without defining ourselves, and I think that's where our message got lost. And being a young person, I do have friends from all across the political spectrum, and a few of them had said, you know, why do you feel the way that you do? Because they saw me, you know, coming home late at night, working 80 hours a week during an election cycle. And why do you devote so much of your time to this? And I said, well, for example, how do you feel about this war on women and this birth control issue? And they're like, well, I think that birth control should be available to everyone. And I said, well, do you think as a taxpayer, you should pay for my birth control? And that's where the conversation changed. And they said, no, why should that happen? And I said, that's exactly the message that's not getting out there at this point. But the Republicans are being demonized to, you know, allow the public to think that, well, we don't want women to have access to birth control. We don't want women to, you know, understand the consequences of their actions. We just want, you know, to be these Bible-thumping bigots, which is what we were basically, you know, led to believe about Republicans in this race. If you looked at one of the ads, Ovid Lamontagne was, you know, blood red in a corner and there's a woman crying. And that was a very, very, you know, visual ad that I think really upset a lot of viewers. And I mean, myself as a young woman, if I didn't know any better, that would have really affected my decision as a voter.
So you agree that it was a big issue.
I think it was a huge issue, but I don't think that it was messaged properly.
Real quickly, Jen, and then back
to
our callers.
I just wanted to say, I actually think support for a broad range of women's reproductive health services is a bipartisan issue in New Hampshire. It has been for decades. The New Hampshire Republican Party has historically had a libertarian bent when it comes to these issues. And when we worked in the election through our local action fund, we worked on behalf of both Republicans and Democrats who share those views.
Let's take one more call if we could. Linda in Manchester. Hi, Linda. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine.
I just thought I'd add a little bit the conversation, particularly around, there was a comment made a little while ago about the stigma that women go through who do end up terminating pregnancy. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, stigma goes both ways. I was in academic medicine and was amazed about 10 years ago when I was pregnant and there were a lot of, I found out at 18 weeks that my child had a genetic condition. And I was amazed at the views of many people when I decided not to terminate my pregnancy. And when I went to genetic counseling, all of the materials that were given to me were just about the stigma of people who terminated, but not about what people would view when you didn't terminate a child who was going to be born with problems. So my point is I think stigma is one of those things that, you know, can go both ways, and I think we forget that in many of these discussions.
Linda, we're nearing the end, so I'll let you go. But thank you very much for calling in. Jen Frizzell, you were the one who made the stigma comment. Linda's saying she was stigmatized on the other end for choosing to go ahead and give birth to a child who had disabilities.
Well, you know, clearly the healthcare system was not adequate in ensuring that Linda had unbiased information for all of her options. You know, at Planned Parenthood, we support women whether they choose to put the child up for adoption, whether they choose to end the pregnancy, or whether they choose to carry that child to term. And we would hope that we live in a society where there would be resources for children born with any types of disabilities. And, you know, that's our promise to the community and to the patients that we serve.
Well, Linda, thanks for calling and for sharing your story. And as we said earlier, both of you, much of the debate about abortion is happening far outside New Hampshire. Ashley Pratt, real quickly, what states are you going to be watching most closely in terms of some of these abortion laws?
Oh, man. I think a few of them we had already mentioned today, but I think that there's potential, I think, in Virginia for some of these to come up. Working with different family policy councils across the country, I've realized that there are more states that are looking to do this. So it should be interesting to see what happens, especially with the governor's race and everything that's going on down there. So,
okay. All right, both of you, thank you very much. It's been real interesting. I appreciate you giving us your time. Thanks a lot. Jennifer Frizzell, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Laura.
Jennifer Frizzell, Senior Policy Analyst for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. Ashley Pratt, good to meet you. Thank you for your
time.
Thank you. Ashley Pratt, Executive Director of Cornerstone Action and Cornerstone Policy Research. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Mikesell. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.